Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, where top performers share their secrets to help you achieve your personal and your professional goals. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and together with my amazing guests, we bring you inspiring and actionable insights to take your life and your business to the next level. Ranked in the top 2% globally, this podcast is a must listen, and I'll say it again, it's because of my guests. So whether you're tuning in for entrepreneurial tips, career advice, or personal development strategies, get ready to turn inspiration into action, challenges into triumphs, and dreams into reality. Today, we are diving into the power of simple daily habits to transform your business and your life, guided by the expertise of Michal Stavisky. Known affectionately as Mr. Consistency in personal development circles, Michal has authored 19 bestsellers, selling over 85,000 copies worldwide. I have one of those on my desk. And transitioning from a database administrator to a sought-after business coach, he's renowned for guiding entrepreneurs towards unprecedented success. That's what this podcast is all about, success, while maintaining balance. And with a focus on habit formation and mindset refinement, he helps solopreneurs double their business within a year. And having impacted over 100,000 business owners, Michal rejects, rejects the notion that success requires sacrificing all else, advocating instead for a balanced approach to growth and fulfillment. Good morning, Michal. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, and thank you for sending me your book.
You're most welcome, Denise. Good morning. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. The book that I have, just let me mention this right away, is called The Art of Persistence. Stop quitting, ignore shiny objects, and climb your way to success. And we'll chat about that in a little bit. But before I get to peppering you with questions, tell people about you. Who are you and what do you do? And what do they need to know about you?
So right now I'm entrepreneur, entrepreneur, because I have those 19 books out there, they are making me money, and business coach. I have my own business as well, a book advertising agency. That's right now. And well, I'm also, if we speak of right now, a dedicated Catholic, a husband, a father of three. My youngest is 17 now, and guys are adults already. But I really, when I tell my story, how I arrived where I am today, I started from 2012, when I was just a miserable cog in a corporate machine, and I didn't feel fulfilled by my life. Everything was okay-ish. I worked a good job, had a good salary. I was the sole provider, so that wasn't as good as it sounds. But my health was so-so, my relationships, like not that very many, not that very deep. And I felt something is missing. And on vacation in Ireland, my sister borrowed me a book, The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. And Jeff triumphs the message of Jim Rohn. Success is a few simple disciplines repeated over time. And for me, that was a huge light bulb, because I thought success is something super grand. Golden medal at Olympics, starting the next Microsoft or Apple. Okay, that's success. And of course, I wasn't capable of that, so I didn't even try to succeed. But small, simple disciplines, maybe I could do that. I seriously grappled with that message for a month before I started to take any actions. The first action was to set a few goals, one for each area of my life, and then figure out daily disciplines that will inch me toward those goals. That's another interesting piece. I was neglecting my personal development for 16 years. My church community was the only place when I reflected upon something from time to time, maybe twice a year, that's all. But even though I neglected my personal developments for so long, I knew the answers. I was able to say, okay, I want this in relationships, I want this in finances, and then figure out what daily things I could do to make them true, those goals. And it all started in September 2012. Then I started a massive personal development project, reading, listening, and watching to everything I could. I read, or rather reread, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and Stephen Covey says there, start with the end in mind, create your personal mission statement. So I did that. It took me about a month, and I rediscovered my childhood dream of being a writer. And next to that, of course, I had my daily disciplines. I started in September, and after a month, I already noticed that I was training speed reading for 10 minutes a day, and I doubled my reading speed. Oh, that was really a great confirmation for me that this concept is working. And I was delighted, by the way, because I'm a lifelong reader. So now I could read two times more books in the same time. And so that really encouraged me to keep going, even in those areas that I wasn't so sure, that wasn't so tangible, like spirituality, for example. But when I look at that period of my life, now it seems to move so quickly, because in May 2013, I published my first book. And in January 2014, I published my first bestseller. And I made like half of my day job salary the next month from book royalties. And in a few more years, I started dabbling with Amazon ads for my books, and the sales exploded again. And a year later, I started providing this service to other authors. And along the way, there was coaching. And I had still had my day job. I worked full time till 2017, if I remember, then scaled it down to half time. And for the last few years, I worked quarter time in PwC. And I quit my job in August 2022.
I'm fascinated by this timeline, but you have mentioned a couple of times that you neglected your personal development. Was there an aha moment, or I'm going to put it in the deep south, an oh shit moment, where you just said, I've got to take better care of me?
No, it was all serendipity, because I was there on vacation. My sister was there. She kind of lived in Ireland, but she is a dancer, so she traveled around the world. And well, our schedules overlapped, and she had that book, which, by the way, she borrowed from someone else. And I read the book, and then the message sank in. And as I said, I struggled for a month before I gave myself permission to try to succeed. But then once I started, first I wanted to give it a good try, at least a month and maybe a few months. And actually, when I go back to that moment, it was like the moment of decision. Well, I will stick at it for as long as it's needed, or for as long as I see that, well, it doesn't change anything. But I could see the changes in a matter of weeks, and in a matter of months, they were just tremendous. And in the matter of years, wow. And a decade? And this is what is so interesting about my my story. I didn't do anything special. Yeah, it took me a decade to quit my day job. There are so many more shiny stories out there on the internet. But the action I took were so small, yet they made so much difference. On the one hand, you had an overripe, kind of broke, miserable corporate cock. On the other hand, you have an entrepreneur, author, coach, and my net worth is like 5 times more than 10 years ago, and I have multiple sources of income, and I made some breakthroughs in my own personal development, like overcoming my shyness. I was so shy, that I couldn't speak to a stranger. Like, it was beyond me. It was too difficult. And now here I am on your podcast talking to tens of thousands of people, and there is zero stress on my part.
That's the beauty of podcasts. Listen, I'm losing my voice. Hang on. It's spring. If there's something in the trees, it's going to fall on my head. Hang on a second. Which means that the trees are dripping all kinds of weird things that make me sneeze, cough. And I don't normally have allergies, but come spring, it gets me. But what I started to say is the beauty of a podcast. Anybody who knows me knows good and well, I am a highly committed introvert. But I'm not shy, and I don't have much in the way of filters. I just need to be left alone 90% of the time. I really do. I'm in my head all the time. I need to be off by myself. Always have been. But the beauty of a podcast is you and I get to chat, and we get to get this message to, as you said, tens of thousands of people, and over time, many more. I love podcasting. It's a great way to get your voice heard. But I wanted to ask you, and you kind of mentioned it before, but I wanted to ask you how you started these tiny shifts, and how can we shift away from instant gratification and embrace consistency in our actions? It's difficult, excuse me. But I hope we don't have to start this all over again. I'm going to try not to cough on you. I'm trying hard. But it is easy to say, oh, I'm going to go do that. And then something pops up. You have to go do something else. You get pulled away. And at the end of the day, you didn't do what you needed to do for yourself. So how do we make these tiny actions a habit, I guess is my real question.
Okay. And the good news is that it's natural for us. Well, not just for us, and we share the same brain parts that are responsible for formation and storing habits with all kind of very primitive animals, like frogs, crocodiles, and birds, and so on. So it's just part of our biology to create habits. Then once you have a habit, it's pretty easy to continue. So yes, development of a habit is the most important part and most difficult. You need a good reason. Okay, there is, sorry, so I will start over with BJ Fogg's behavioral model. And it says that you need motivation and ability, and there needs to be a trigger. So motivation and ability needs to meet at a certain point, So you may have high motivation, but very little abilities, like me starting writing career. Yes, I wanted to create a new life for me, but I was clueless about writing. It took me almost a month to figure out what writers do. They write, so I started writing. And writing habit at that, yeah. So I started writing every day on working days, and I did it Saturday, and also Sunday. So ability needs to meet with motivation. If you have both low ability and low motivation, it's hard to start, and it needs
I
to be
think
so, yeah.
I think we scare ourselves. We're like, oh, I don't know how to do that. I don't have time to learn that. And we just give ourselves a whole list of reasons why, oh, I'll do it later. That's
Yeah,
not a
so
good idea.
that's the what I consider it. It's the simplest method for subconscious mind to save you energy, because you will say one sentence in your head, and then years of writing for half an hour or an hour a day are poofed, gone. You didn't spend this energy. So that's the easiest way your subconscious controls how much you are really expenditure your energy. That's one. So I was about to tell, when you're low above, you need to make the habit absolutely easy. So it's both below your abilities and motivation. So if it's writing, then I think writing a sentence, that's it. That's what you are starting with, and then scale up. Or in case of exercises, it's one push-up, that's all. You don't need to do any more. So you make the habit just ridiculously easy, so you can do it consistently, regularly, and preferably, if you could do it multiple times a day, you will speed up formation of the habit by an order of magnitude. And I also mentioned trigger in that model, but it's also something that is like a part of a neural loop for habit formation. If you want to develop a habit, as I said, preferably a habit you can do multiple times a day, you need a trigger for it. And there are different kinds of triggers, but the best ones are the activities you are already doing in your life. For example, when I try to lose weight, I created a habit of doing some exercises after my toilet visit. Yeah, so of course I was peeing several times a day, and I was already doing that, and then it was an excellent excuse to start some small physical activity.
I do something similar. I have a couple of vibration plates, and I don't know if everybody knows what those are, but you turn them on, you stand on them, and they jiggle the heck out of you. You have a lot of sound, but you feel better. And I have developed the habit, what the past year, I guess, of getting on and spending 10 minutes. There's an exercise routine I do with it. And I come out of there, honestly, panting after 10 minutes. I'm like, oh my gosh. But once I've calmed down a little bit, I can jump on this podcast and I'm more focused. I feel like I did something for myself that made sense. I can't always walk the dog. I can't always, you know, go into my gym, which is in my garage, and spend time out there. But that vibration plate, I actually enjoy it. It helps amazingly well with focus. And if I don't do it before I get on a podcast, I catch myself stumbling a bit.
I had a thought which just escaped about habit formation. Yeah, okay, you said that we are saying those things in our heads This is also what helps immensely when you start very small. When I started, I had no clue about how habit loop looks and about the science of habits, yet I successfully developed dozens of daily habits in a matter of weeks. I think that the most crucial success factor there was that I considered it all doable. I had this, and also I considered it worthwhile. So if you do something consistently, it compounds. So if it's a minute, 5 or 10 minutes, still something you do for a minute, 2 or 5 or 10 for your goal. And if you do not contract it, it will grow and help you. And you heard about my daily disciplines, training speed reading for 10 minutes or reading professional documentation for 10 minutes. Like those kind of small things, they do not connect the dots to quitting your day job and living off your own business. Like it doesn't add up. But this is how the compound effect works. If you keep doing things consistently, then the effect is so out of proportion to the action. And that's why you should start very small, because you can do it. If you can do it, you can sustain it. And if you can sustain it, you will eventually develop a habit.
Exactly. So what are the two types of motivation and when should we apply them?
So it's funny, in Polish we can grasp it on a gut level, but in English there are actually like two separate definitions of motivation. One that refers to this feeling, okay, I feel motivated in this here and there, and the other definition says that it's some purpose that drives you to take the action. And so I call them purposeful motivation and emotional motivation. And both of them have their own place. This emotional here and now motivation is excellent to start something. And if you get this moment of inspiration, come on and utilize it. But when it comes to habit development, this purposeful motivation is so much better, because you can, even on the days you don't feel like doing it, you can consciously go back to your sense, to the purpose of this specific daily discipline, and like explain to yourself why you are doing this and keep going.
Well, that makes sense. So I wanted to ask you, you and I had talked in the pre-interview about the scientifically proven methods endorsed by Stanford University. Can you share those?
Okay. Those are methods for changing one's behavior. And the first one is enlightenment. So something happened and you totally change, like in a moment of seconds or maybe hours. Then there is change of environment, and there are multiple possible things that apply here, like changing a job or graduating from a school or losing someone close or getting into a new relationship or moving to another city, country, place. So changing your environment, because when you change your environment, you also change the whole set of triggers in your environment. You take different road to work, or you listen to different people, and it can like destroy some of your old habits because you no longer have triggers for them. and it's an opportunity to create new habits. And the third way, which is considered by Stanford the most reliable, is changing your life by small daily habits. And it was also illustrated in the book The Power of Habit. The author, Charles Duhigg, he said about the research, scientists wanted to know exactly what makes people to change their lives like for good. And when they started, they had those ideas we all have. Yeah, it has to be something significant, like death in family, or you are bestowed with fortune, or anything else. But they did the research in a very sensible way. So they found people who actually changed their lives and backtrack what happened. And in the most cases, it was the change of daily habits. And often it was a change, like the origin change was one new habit that created this compound effect, and multiple new good habits developed, and then the whole life changed.
I think I mentioned this at the top of the show, I have The Art of Persistence written by you on my desk, and I'm in chapter 12, and you're talking about Maxwell Maltz, and I've studied him, I think most of us have, and you say that, or he says, I can't remember now, either here, you said you only do what is in accordance with your self-image. If you consider yourself shy, you won't be able to start a conversation with a stranger. If you consider yourself a slow learner, you won't think of applying to the top college. That's fascinating. And it's, you know, I have always said that the worst talk that we ever hear is the way we speak to ourselves. I mean, we can do some serious damage to ourselves just with self-talk.
That's very valid. And I have another book, Power Up Your Self-Talk. And it's about really how to prepare yourself to talk better to yourself. Because those books which gives you concrete things to say, they ignore the fact that we are on autopilot. So my book is about how to get out of the autopilot so you can actually notice what's going on in your head and then change something. Maxwell Maltz made this observation because he was a plastic surgeon. So he was able to change people faces, how they looked. But he noticed that some of them looked at the mirror and they didn't perceive the reality, but they rather saw what was their identity, like the previous identity, because they were deformed. So they thought they are ugly. And it's, yeah, I think self-talk is a part of how we do it to ourselves.
We do. And I've often said that if anybody in a Walmart parking lot spoke to me the way I speak to myself every once in a while, I would need bail money. I would be in jail. I mean, it's just, and I have learned, I live alone, so I can get by with this, but I talk to myself out loud a lot because and I don't even know if this is true, if there's any scientific basis for it, but I find that if I'm speaking out loud, I can basically only have about one thought at a time instead of thinking in my head and all of these, I'm being clobbered by all of these different inputs. So I will speak something out loud. And if I catch myself speaking to me in an ugly way, I have a talk with myself right then, right there, and I correct it.
That's awesome, seriously.
Good. I don't want anybody to think I'm totally nuts, but I talk out loud a lot.
And that's a perfect way to get out of your head and into your brain, really.
Exactly.
So because you hear the words, they are spoken aloud, it take, you know, the processing of the words takes this part of the brain which is responsible for logical thinking. You need to decode a language, give it a meaning, and so on. But if, when you don't speak aloud, well, what we consider self-talk is quite often not just talk, but it's mingled with emotions and bodily signals, and we cannot decompose that. Like, and we are it. Yeah, it's our inside our own skin. So we consider it natural. It's part of my world. I do not challenge it. It's pretty hard to challenge, even notice your self-talk just in your head, unless you have some mindfulness training.
It's almost impossible. We have so many thoughts just pursuing one after the other, crossing, crashing, making noise in our heads. But if you stop and just say it out loud, I will, you know, I'll say it out loud. Oh, good girl, Denise, or Denise, what the heck? And then off I go and I'm having a chat with myself. These days, though, I've gotten pretty good at it. And I'm like, oh, good girl. So I'm much happier with the way I speak to myself most days.
And also very important when it goes to changing your mindset. I follow Jim Rohn. Because
oh,
it made a lot of sense for me
right.
when he talked about personal philosophy and how personal philosophy is shaped is by input sources and the meaning you give to the input. And quite often the meaning is given by a way of self-talk. Yeah, because two people can get the same lesson and one can be, okay, let's apply it. It makes sense in life. And the other may be, oh, it worked for them because they are rich or famous or whatever. And just saying this in this tone will prevent you from applying the lesson. So, yeah, it's very useful to be able to track your self-talk so you can catch yourself and change your behavior. And then, because it's, as I said, it's a part of changing your mindset. But if you do not have skills in this part, well, all the knowledge in the world will give you no good, because in the end, you will deflect everything and not embrace it.
Exactly. And I wanted to ask you, what makes tiny habits such a dependable method for achieving results across different aspects of life? And the reason I ask that is because I am now on page 90 and you're talking about my tiny habit experience. And you're talking about the most vivid of them is your gratitude journaling. And you started a gratitude diary about your wife. Can we chat about that?
Yeah. So when I started my personal development journey, I noticed that plenty of people recommend to keep a gratitude journal or any kind of gratitude practice. So I started one about my wife, and then quickly I added one about my kids, and then I started writing a gratitude journal about my days. Like, if I'm correct, I started from three things I was grateful for. By the way, that's like commonly met in many books and advice, that starting from those three new things to be grateful for every day. And it, like, this practice snowballed and snowballed to the moment where I am today. I have this gratitude diary about my wife, another about my kids, and about myself. And overall, there are like 20, 40 entries every day. So that's the growing part of it. Yeah, I started very tiny from one journal about my wife and just 1 to 3 things about her. And a few years later, I had those 20, 40 entries every day. So that's one thing. And the other is, well, gratitude itself. I don't remember the exact time, 2015, 16. I listened to a podcast with Sean Acker about gratitude. And he said that everything scientists could test for was better when the brain was positive, and gratitude revives brain into positivity. So this was my light bulb moment, because a pretty pessimist guy still, but I was just hopeless pessimist before 2012. And then in this 2015 or 16, I already had some very nice results, published plenty of books, sold thousands of copies. We bought our home, which wasn't possible before. And then I realized that, okay, it was because of the gratitude, because it rewired my brain and it made everything better in my life. I got this, I think Sean even mentioned the particular metric. It's like from 15 to 30% better. Yeah? So if you practice gratitude, your grades will be 15 to 30% better. Your sales can be better. Your fitness, health, relationships, everything they could measure was always better when you practice gratitude.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I had a podcast guest. I don't remember now. This podcast is 16 years old. It was in the early days, so it was probably 14, 15 years ago. And this is a very emotional interview that I did with this gentleman. And he had been diagnosed with a nasty form of cancer. I mean, he was basically given zero hope. No hope at all. Go home, get your affairs in order, and good luck to you, basically. And he decided that he wasn't going to accept that. And I'm trying to remember because it was a long time ago. But it turned out that he was able to cure himself. I mean, he had the surgery. He did, the medical, he did follow his doctor's to some degree. But he decided that he was going to embark on what he called massive gratitude. And he did. And every breath he took darn near was him being thankful, him being grateful. And this podcast, this interview was multiple years after he was supposed to have died. And I took him very seriously. Up until that point, I'll be honest with you, I hadn't even considered it. I was like, okay, good day, going to sleep now, bye-bye. Once I realized that gratitude was sorely lacking in my life, I changed my mind pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's the power of gratitude. And going back to tiny habits, why they are so good? Because they are tiny. That's the difference between our ignorant resolutions and between science. If we take the New Year resolution, I will start working out in the gym 4 times a week, pumping iron for 1 hour a day. We set ourselves for failure. But if you start from tiny habits,
every New Year's, you can see it coming.
You start from tiny habit, which is maximum 30 seconds. So you can pump iron for 30 seconds, or better yet, the smaller the better. Like I said, one push-up. Okay, that's your tiny habit. The likelihood of you doing it consistently skyrockets. And why it's so important? Because when you amass enough repetitions, you'll finally have a habit. And once you have a habit, you cannot get rid of it. It's a neural loop written down in your brain, and the only way to get rid of it is just lobotomy. That's all.
Absolutely. And, you know, I can almost hear people saying, yeah, but I want to lose 10 pounds by Memorial Day. Well, do something.
Well, yeah,
Go
if it's
do
a Memorial
something.
Day next year, it's even better because you have more
Right.
time.
Exactly.
And you can start small and scale up, do one push-up, and, well, eat one vegetable, raw vegetable a day, and then figure out other things you can do, small, simple things. So I had also a book about weight loss. I wasn't obese, I just was several, maybe 10 pounds overweight, but it was ruining my health and quality of life. So the small things I introduced were like, I will run the stairs, not climb them. And as I mentioned, my toilet visits, I will add a set of exercises there and one set of exercises in the morning. And they all took me like maximum 2 minutes. And then, of course, the diet part. I eliminated white carbs from my diet.
Me too.
Changed to whole bread and introduce vegetables and fruits. Like one of my rules was at least one raw vegetable or fruit a day. So very, very small things, but overall they compounded, and I was able to reach my dream weight in about half a year.
And that's healthier. I mean, we, you know, Americans in particular are overweight. As a nation, we're obese or getting there. And then all of a sudden you see all these bizarre diets. Oh, you're going to lose 50 pounds in a month. No, you're not. You're going to kill yourself. Stop it. It's just make those small changes. I mean, it took you a long time to get where you are. Use some
Well,
common sense to
when
get
it
to
comes
where you need to be.
to losing weight, my thought was, and I'm still fanatical about it, it's you are creating a new lifestyle. So don't chase some newest diet or exercise regime. Think of what you can do for the rest of your life. Yeah, I can run stairs instead of slowly climbing them. Now it's my second nature. I can eat an apple a day. Yes. So think in those terms, or I can eliminate those cookies from the market. Come on, they are not that good.
No.
Yeah. So I
My
can live
attitude,
without them.
yeah. My attitude about going, my grocery store here is local, and most of the things on the left, the right side of the store are locally sourced. I live near the Gulf of Mexico. We eat a lot of fresh foods, fresh crawfish, fresh fish, yeah, alligator. We eat a lot of very fresh foods. But when you go to the other side, excuse me, the other side of the store, the lighting changes, the flooring changes, because everything there is in cans or in the freezer section, or it's in boxes, and it's all very brightly colored and pretty. And I will always say, you might as well just lick the box. There's no nutrition in that stuff. Don't eat it.
Amen.
That's my rant for the day. I wanted to ask you, because we've been talking about journals, and one thing, I'm not even sure how to phrase this. When you started writing your journals, your gratitude journals in particular, isn't that almost a way for you to realize that, you know, I probably never noticed this about her? Or if I did, I just swept right on past it and asked, what's for dinner? Did it give you, reading back on them, a lot of insight into who your wife actually is and what you were missing?
Yes, and it applies to all kind of reflection you do. Because when it comes to gratitude journaling, it's asking yourself a question, what I'm grateful for, in case of my wife, kids. And our brain is, my belief is, the primary function of the brain is search engine. We have like 11 point something millions of sensual inputs every second. But we can notice like a few dozen of things every second. That's the max of the capacity of our conscious mind. So in order to filter all those impulses and give us a handful of data for the conscious mind, the brain needs to filter much, much better than Google to search for the data. And when you are starting to ask yourself such questions, you start instilling those filters into your data. And with time, it becomes natural, like second nature for you. Right now, I can start talking about what I'm grateful for and keep going for an hour.
Me too.
Because I train myself. But I remember that I was riding back from a retreat with my best friend, who was in bad period of his life, and I asked him, because they taught us a bit about gratitude on the retreat, what you are grateful for. And he was like, oh, thinking hard and saying one thing, then another. And the third one, it was like so hard labor. But it was because he didn't train that muscle. He didn't have those filters in his brain.
Oh, were you able to convince him that he maybe needed to train his brain?
Oh, yeah. Now he's much better than me.
Oh, that's good. Listen, I'm on page 98, and this is kind of in keeping with what we have been discussing. And you said progress measurement is a cornerstone of achievement. And this one I really like. Track every new habit. If it's not written down, it doesn't count. And that is true. And your tracking system must be easy to do, and you must own it in your mind to not deplete your resources. What do you mean by that?
Well, because it looks like additional effort. You are starting a new habit. I will go to the gym for 1 hour, and then I will also track if I was at the gym, or maybe what exercises I did, and maybe for how long each exercise. So the more complicated the tracking becomes, the harder it is to do it, and then it adds to the difficulty of your overall life. And well, actually, that was pretty bad example, because the habit itself is huge. But calorie tracking is a good example, because we eat anyway something, but then the act of, okay, I will write down what I ate and how much calories it had. The more elaborate you will make this process, the harder it will be for you to track. So my tracking system was, I was carrying around just pen and paper and writing down, okay, two sandwiches with this, that's all. So it was easy and simple. And it's the same with like digital tools. Let's say you want to track your meals or calories in some application. But you are not a tech savvy, installing the application, then creating the profile, then using it, it may be a challenge. And well, that's like random thought, but I had it somewhere in my books. Sometimes people recommend you the tools, but for example, you need social media to adapt because you have business and you will market yourself. Yeah, that's a pretty good advice, but if you do not have a social media profile, or if you hate social media, it's terrible advice. So tracking needs to be adjusted to your life. What you can do. Maybe you cannot carry pen and paper everywhere with you, and you are a Gen Z, and your smartphone is like extension of yourself. So it's very easy for you to install another application and track your finances or your calorie intake or whatever else. So you need to adjust your tracking method to your lifestyle to make it easy and make sure it's easier than the discipline itself.
Right, right. I like index cards of all things. I have stacks of index cards, and I know that I need to, you know, I have a slotted box. You know, these are okay, go back to this and look at it today. This can be done within the week. And that way, at the end of the day, when I go, and I don't know, I just like the feel of index cards for some reason. And I'm able to go ahead and at almost at a glance at the end of the day say, okay, I didn't do this, go do that now. Got this, I can move this one over to do this next week. And then I can walk out of my office into my kitchen and with a clear brain. It works for me.
Yes, and I think there is advantage of physical over digital.
There is, and I'm a nerd. Everybody knows that I'm a nerd in stilettos, but I still need to write things down.
There was a plethora of research done about handwriting versus typing,
right?
And in the end, they decided that handwriting is better, not because it's better, but because we actually use more muscles, and it has like so going back to the nature of human memory, it's associative. So if you're typing, you are investing more of you into the activity, so you have less data points, and that's why the process is less beneficial. But if you use handwriting just by the act of keeping something in your fingers and doing the moves, you invest more muscles, and then you can keep more memories. So physical has this advantage over digital, because we are physical beings as well.
We are, and I tend to do both. So if I lose something, it's either in my calendar or it's in my nifty little box. I don't tend to lose much because I'm always making sure that I've written it down somewhere or somehow. Mikhail, we are out of time, and I sincerely appreciate your company today, and spending time with you has been such a pleasure. Before I let you go, do you have any last thoughts to share with our audience, and how can listeners connect with you on the web?
Last thoughts, success is a few simple disciplines repeated over time. And if you want to start a new habit, start very small, because it's easy, and easy gets the things done. While difficult, you have your internal resistance, and it's difficult in itself, and life can get into your way. Start small and easy. You can scale up later. Once you develop a habit of doing one push-up, making 10 more is no-brainer. You already are on the floor, and you can scale up very easily. Where to find me? So great to be a Polish guy in the English-speaking space. Google me and add anything to that: coaching, books, Amazon, and I will be at the top of the search results. And I have something for audience, Denise. Get in touch with me on social media. I'm active on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Send me the direct message, business24, and I will send you back my mini course, which is not available anywhere else. And it's a course that will take you from through the coaching process. You will coach yourself. define your goal, find out what holds you up, and then you will, well, along the way, you will self-correct yourself. So find me on social media, send me business24, message, one word, and it will be yours.
I'm going to do that. And I'm sorry, I think I just coughed on you. I forgot to mute myself. It came on quickly. So everybody, as we conclude today's episode, your feedback means a lot. So if you found the show helpful, please support us with a quick review on iTunes. Your input is vital in my mission to inspire and empower more individuals. So don't forget to hit subscribe, leave a review, and share your Partner in Success Radio with friends. And be sure to find Mikhail Stavicki. I'm sorry, I'm trying to.
That's how it is written in English.
It is, I know, and that's not how it's pronounced. But find him on the web and connect with him. And thank you for tuning in. And I will see you next week. And I am heading over to Ask for Business 24. Thank you again.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.